for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back again with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. And it's the world of non-league football that celebrates the FA Cup once again this week. It is the third qualifying round of the greatest cup competition in the world. Only 40 ties, but what an opportunity for those 80 clubs taking part. So, of course, we start the show with our very own Mr. at FA Cup Fact File, FA Cup Stato Man, Mr. Philonets. He gives us some insight and some knowledge into the ties coming ahead this weekend. And then we head down south to one of those clubs who take part in the third qualifying round of the FA Cup this weekend. Winchester City, said to be one of the greatest cities to live in the country, and it's not a bad shout. They're a club that have taken their place in Step 3 and have racked up a couple of very good results in recent weeks, but now entertain Maidstone United of the National South, formerly of the National League, and of course, formerly with a long, great history under another guise. But now, in Conference South, they are currently pushing again for playoffs and promotion and travel to Winchester City in the FA Cup this weekend. So we hear from the lower-ranked club to see how they are preparing for one of their biggest games in their history, if not the biggest, certainly at their home ground. Rounding it all up, it's Matt Badcock, editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, with a few insights into the major stories of the week. Not a massive week in the world of non-league football stories, but one that may have a long-standing impact on the future of the game. Plenty to be covered, and Matt also gives us some insight into the stories that the non-league paper will be covering this weekend. An exciting show ahead once again, so sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Let's as ever start off this week's show with a familiar voice. Our Mr. Stato. It is, of course, FA Cup weekend. It's the third qualifying round no news clubs entering this round, but clubs that have certainly got their eyes on maybe a big name in the next round. And this is always it's an exciting round if you're involved. I think if you're not involved, it seems to be a little bit more difficult to get excited about it. But I'm sure that our guest is very excited because he's had to do probably less research than normally. But let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show our FA Cup guru. It's at FA Cup Fat Foul, Mr. Philonets. Welcome back, Phil.
Hello, Tim. Yes, it is a great round. I think the third qualifying round, with that anticipation of being able to get through to the chance to meet a top level non-league side in the next round. So you're right, those that are involved in this round will be very excited about that prospect.
Yeah, it is just a handful of clubs as well, isn't it, really, compared to the rounds that you've had to deal with. Does that mean that you get to know more about the clubs when you're doing your research?
It can do. I mean, I can get to know more about the proportion of the ties, I guess. 40 ties in total, as compared to 200 odd in the earlier round. So yeah, it is easy to get a handle on it. But what often is the case the later on you go in the non-league round is that the clubs often are meeting up their opponents for the first time. And so there's not a lot of history to actually talk about in terms of their head-to-heads. And you know, you do find also a lot of the clubs are at the stage of the competition quite often. So again, there are stories out there, but they're not, not abundant, if you like.
They're not. And I've read each one of your fact files on each of these ties that you've got put out there on social media. We'll remind people how to do that later on. But yeah, there's a number of clubs that are meeting for the first time. There's it's almost, they've got similar tales, haven't you? There's certainly
what interested me that, yeah, when we talk about the history of the FA Cup, there seem to be quite a few clubs that are in their 100th FA Cup competition this year.
Well, there has been quite a few who've hit the 100 mark this season. And there's obviously many more that have had more than 100, but I just like to celebrate the centenary campaigns. And there's two clubs still standing who are celebrating their 100th campaign. And that's Lancaster City, who I think they're hosting Aston United, looking to try and avenge a defeat from about 14 years ago. And then there's Nantwich Town, who are taking on their neighbours Chester, a team they wouldn't normally play. Obviously with the difference in their levels and divisions. And in the FA Cup, actually, they've not played a Chester FC for over 100 years. So this is a big day for them to go and play their near neighbours. And I suppose what they need to hold on to is when they did last face Chester in the FA Cup, they beat them 5-0. So, you know, they could go with that kind of attitude and nothing to lose, even though they are the lower league side.
And I like that, you know, we do have these new Phoenix clubs, but certainly if you're a fan of that club, there tends to be a feeling that they're the same. And one of the other ones that I spotted was the Darlington Scarborough tie.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. So Darlington are playing Scarborough Athletic for the very first time, but Darlington as a club has faced the original Scarborough several times in the FA Cup, and in fact on a memorable occasion for anyone who was around in the 19th century, they have their record FA Cup score against Scarborough of 13 goals to 1 just in the 1891-92 season, for anyone who wants to check.
And if anybody was at that game in 1891, please do get in contact, because I'm sure there's many a tale that they could be telling. Of course, we always love to celebrate the underdogs. There's plenty of those, and of course the last club from Step 5.
That's right. Just one Step 5 club has made it through to the third qualifying round, and that's Emley AFC. And it's all the more remarkable that they are the last standing Step 5 club, because they actually lost their extra preliminary round tie against Avro. So we're actually knocked out. Unfortunately, Avro were deemed to have, I think, played an ineligible player. And so Emily were awarded the tie, and that good fortune has seen them take it all the way through to the third qualifying round, where they've now got a great tie against a Step 2 opposition of Alfreton Town.
And I'm hoping that somewhere there's a quiz night on Friday night somewhere in the country where that's going to be the popular question there. You know, what side plays in the FA Cup this weekend, having ordinary been eliminated from the competition?
Yeah.
It's and you heard it here, Mr. Philanet's giving us the info there. Obviously, record breakers are always amongst our discussions and your stats. Kettering Town again, they just seem to write themselves into the history books every round.
Yeah, I did like their tweet at the end of the last round when they scored the goal that took them to be the top scoring club in the FA Cup. It's, they said, call 911. We're now the top scoring FA Cup club, as they have now scored 911 goals in the competition. So they're one ahead of Tottenham, and they've got a chance again, obviously, to extend that as they travel to Hitchin Town. And so that should be quite interesting to see if they can continue adding to their goal tally.
Yeah, the BBC Red Button tie, the iPlayer, and that the 12:30 kick-off on Saturday afternoon. Leek Town, South Shields. I keep meaning to look myself. What's the... How successful are these home clubs in these red button ties? Because I always fear for a club that probably has played the majority, you know, 99% of their games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, getting shifted for their biggest game in their history to a 12:30 Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, so I guess it can be disruptive. I'm not really sure. I've not kept tabs on how the lower league side has done. But I'm sure they'd be up for the game if they played it at midday or midnight. It's a big game for the home side there. League Town Step 4 versus National League North South Shields, who obviously not long ago were the in the opposite position, where they were the lower league side that the BBC decided to highlight, and I think they did win their game. So it's a great day for the League Town fans, and hopefully it will be a great contest. And and I know also that I think my stats were going to appear in the League Town programme, so I'm very happy to be part of that day.
Very, very good. And having been involved with football clubs organising TV games and everything else that goes with these big games, I'd imagine there's probably a number of people involved at League Town that are very pleased that it kicks off at 12:30, because they've probably been working through the night to get there.
Yeah, it's very possible, yes, to make it all happen, indeed. So it's over with, and they can have a bit of netting the hair down earlier on Saturday than they might normally do.
Yeah, and as ever, I love going through and sort of spotting any trends or sort of particularly the wordplay. The phone derby, have you spotted that one, Phil?
Which one are we looking at here? Which one?
The phone derby, the BT derby.
Oh, the BT derby. Oh, the phone derby, yes. Beagles Way. No, who is it? It's Brackley, is it?
Brackley,
yeah,
yes.
Brackley Town at Braintree Town,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yes, it's... Yeah. I don't know whether the there's a great history between the two BTs, but I'm sure Maureen Lipman should be invited to the game.
I think she should be, yes, forget that orgy. They've met twice in the FA Cup before. Brackley have won both times, so it'll be interesting to see if they're calling home again, as it does on Saturday evening.
So I've picked out a few of my favourites there, Phil. Any other particular note that you think people should be aware of, particularly stats?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that I'd like to just highlight there. There's a few other teams that started off in the extra preliminary round alongside Emley AFC, who are still standing. So three Step 4 clubs. There's Cambridge City, who are travelling to Hereford. And there's... Galston, who are at this stage for the first time in about 40 years, who are hosting Hemel Hempstead, which I thought that might have been the game that the BBC chose to show, but that would be great for them to carry on in the competition. I particularly like the Biggleswade Town versus Barton Rovers tie, where Barton Rovers started off in the extra preliminary round. These two clubs are the highest scoring clubs who are still in the competition. Both have netted 16 times, so I guess we can expect a 0-0 draw on Saturday. The consequence.
And not so many ties this weekend in the competition, Phil, but are you off to able to go and see any of these games this year and this weekend? And if so, where are you off to?
Well, I'm hoping to go down the south coast and watch AFC Totten take on Berkhamsted. Berkhamsted, they're at this stage of the competition. If they win, they'll go as further than they've ever been before. I also enjoy going to watch games where you've got two clubs at the same level from one division. So this is a Southern League Premier South versus a Southern League Premier Central. So interesting to compare the two standards of those two level leagues.
And interesting, because I believe if Tottenham win that, then I might have a free weekend, having been due to play them in the league in 2 weekends' time. But it's, as ever, Phil, it's always interesting talking to you, because you always... You've always share your stats and facts. Just remind everybody where they can find your information out there in the ether.
Well, you can always catch me on Twitter at FA Cup Fat Far. I have provided some facts and stats for all 40 third qualifying round games, some probably more interesting than others, but hopefully you can have a look and see if your club's there and enjoy what I've pulled together.
Phil Innetts, thank you once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Cheers, Ken. Thanks for that.
So let's head on over then to one of the clubs involved in this FA Cup third qualifying round this weekend, and a man in charge of a side who are quite an informed side at the moment in the Southern Premier South. It's a welcome to the Non-League Football Show to Craig Davies, manager at Winchester City. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to get you on, Craig. You know, I've been obviously a side in the division that my own club play in, but I say a side in form because I think this week is, what, three wins under your belt, including, well, the table topping for form side Chesham United, and then in the Hampshire Derby against Basingstoke this week as well. You must be in good mood going into this FA Cup match this weekend.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've been ever so up and down, including, I mean, we went to your place and played some fantastic stuff on the day, and then, you know, we then go to Didcot and perform dreadfully, and we've been very up and down. Obviously, we're not one of the fancy teams in this league, but we've got a fantastic spirit and we play some really good football on our day. And yeah, we just found ourselves a little bit of form at the right time. We sort of scrambled past Reading City in the last round. We drew away, albeit we missed a penalty, our fourth penalty miss of the season.
Wow.
So we ended up getting a replay, beat them very well, 4-1, played them so well that day. And then, yeah, went to Chesham, who were top of the league and 7 out of 7, and played it really well, won that day. And then Basingstoke were then the form team of the league that after Chesham had lost, and we beat them. So yeah, we found ourselves on a rich vein of form, but we're obviously going to need to be playing incredibly well to get a good result against a good Maidstone team on Saturday.
Yeah, you're hosting Maidstone United in this third qualifying round. I think they're seventh in the National South, played 10, won 5. Yeah, they've got great experience throughout their ranks. And as you say, you're going to have to be on the best form of your life, which you appear to be. But they're not going to enjoy coming to your ground because, as you say, your spirit, both on and off the field, is amongst the strongest I think I've seen in non-league this year.
Well, that's very nice to say. I mean, that's something that we do have to do. You know, it's well renowned that we've not got the biggest budget in the league. We make the most of it, and we sign some really good players, but it's usually, based on circumstances like their location or they want to stay local, things like that. We have to do that, and what we do offer is a place where people will enjoy their football. Lovely people around the club. There's not massive amounts of pressure, and fans that will get on your back or anything like that. We've got a great little batch of supporters that follow us everywhere, and shout and sing for us. And yeah, we've really sort of honed in that spirit side of things. We got promoted against the odds. Everyone was expecting other teams to go up, and we did it. And we had a tough season last year, but we stayed up very comfortably in the end. And obviously this year, and I think every year for us, it's about staying up, and we've got plans for a new 3G pitch and that sort of stuff. So this year is really vital that we, stay up and have a half decent season. And yeah, we've started a bit up and down, but we seem to have found our feet, and we're gonna embrace the day and give them hell, so to speak, on the pitch, and chase after every lost cause and jump on every second ball and put bodies on the line and all that sort of stuff. Because you're right, we're going to have a bit of luck, a bit of fortune. There's been bigger giant killings than Winchester, yeah, from step three, beating Maidstone from step two, albeit I know there was some Commerce Prem last year, but yeah, there'll be bigger shocks than that even on Saturday, I would imagine.
Is it the biggest game that you've managed at the club? I mean, we had a long-serving manager last week, but I think you've been at Winchester City, what, since the 16-17 season? I mean, some of our listeners probably haven't even been watching non-league that long.
Yeah, I mean, I took over at Fleet Town, that was step four at the time. We had zero budget, and as a 30-year-old, I was a captain and I was made caretaker manager. I ended up keeping us up every year for 4 years, skin of our teeth, 5 years. And then I went from that to Winchester, which again wasn't a big budget team, but at least had our half a chance of having a reasonable season at step four. And yeah, we've gradually got better. We were 14th the season I took over, then it was 10th, then 6th, then we had the two COVID seasons when we were 4th. Then we got promoted the next season, and then obviously last year. So we've incrementally improved the team and the squad and that sort of stuff. And I've been there quite a long time now. But in fairness, some of the players have been with me that whole way through as well, which makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think it helps that in, well, one of the greatest locations. They do say Winchester's one of the greatest places to live in the country. It's certainly a desirable location. What I liked is the fact that, you know, you're promoting this game, big game for the club and for you. And the sponsor really seems to have got behind you as well, a local hotel and spa. And I think that probably says a lot about your club as well.
Yeah, and it's literally a stone's throw away from our ground as well, and you know, we know lots of people that work there, and yeah, they've been good for us, sponsored us well, Winchester Hotel and Spa. But you know, all of our sponsors are really important to us. We've not got huge benefactors and things like that, so we rely on lots of different sponsors. You know, Charters obviously our main sponsor, and yeah, we've got, you know, all of, I could list them all, but we've got lots of other sponsors. But yeah, going back to your question about is it the biggest game I've ever managed, I think the playoff final when we got promoted was probably the bigger, in a way. To get promoted was huge, but we also, in a couple of seasons ago, our best ever run in the cup was to the fourth qualifying round, and we played Torquay away and lost there 4-1. Played quite well, but soundly beaten, really. So I guess it's the biggest one-off kind of game, a cup game, I suppose, in the time since Torquay, I'd say.
Yeah, and you mentioned that 4G in the, I think planning went in the start of August. What sort of impact will that have on the club, and what sort of impact will that have on you as a manager if it gets passed?
Well, as you said, you've seen us. We do play football, and we always tend to play better on better pitches. And you know, thankfully, your ground is lovely, and we play some good stuff. But It helps from that perspective of having a, you know, decent surface. You know, they try hard with our pitch, but we you know, it's not a carpet, that's for sure. But we play some good football, so that will help from that perspective. You know, everybody knows financially it helps to have you know, the facilities there to do that, from you know, from a sponsorship perspective, and for having lots of people playing football at the pitch all day, every day. And you know, that element really helps. We've got massive amounts of teams in the youth section and the girls section, so our community will really get behind it. And having that ground as a hub will, you know, bring more and more people to the club and seeing what, you know, what a great level of football we're playing at. And also it will help with selling it to other players that we're trying to bring in, usually for less money than they can get elsewhere. You know, if you've got nice facilities to do it at, it's much easier to sell as well. So it helps in every single facet, really. So we're really hopeful it happens, and you know, we're confident it will be.
it will happen. You mentioned when you first came in, as an interim player manager and still very young. As a player, did you ever expect to go into coaching, into management?
I was a pro at Cardiff as a kid. Got released at sort of 20. Fell into a recruitment job and things like that. And you know, you sort of get on with your life. But I was very, I sort of had a bit of that. People used to have a, you know, a wise head on young shoulders type thing. So I was usually a captain, and most of the time most of the teams I played for. And you know, luckily when I was at Cardiff, we did the UEFA B badge. You know, you had the option to do that. Most people didn't bother doing it, but I did it. I mean, I lived away from home, so I might as well put the hours in and do it. So I did do it. So that, you know, I always sort of did that, but I certainly didn't think I'd get into management at sort of 30. And you know, I'm now 42, 12 years of doing it. People would say you're a young manager, but I've seen some tough old times with the zero budgets and, you know, lower budgets compared to others and all that sort of stuff, and the challenges that you have to face with that. I love it, to be honest. People say there's no substitute for playing, but you know, I still play a bit of vets football and stuff like that. And you know, I'm still signed on technically to the club, and if I, you know, I'd roll out there and do a bit. But I'm way past that. But I absolutely love it and thrive on seeing the team play well. And because we're not, you know, expectations are not massively high, I do say to the lads, and I mean it wholeheartedly, but I used to say, even when we were going for promotion, what I expect is a performance. And if I enjoy watching us play, then, you know, I know that we've got a chance because, you know, we play a good brand of football. And if I enjoy what we're doing, I'm pretty confident that we'll get the results that will follow. So I do really push for that. And the lads know that they got to give their all and play in a way that is, you know, kind of a bit of a DNA of us for the last few years of being, you know, forward thinking and trying to play on the front foot, not just banging it long and scrapping for the ball. We try and play good stuff. So, you know, we're not going to get loads of the ball Saturday, that's for sure. So we're going to have to do all the ugly side of the things. But when we've got it, we've got to be really neat and tidy and not give it away, or otherwise it'll be a long day.
And does it help for these big games to be at home for a big game like this? Or would that additional bonding on the coach have helped?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a fantastic away record this year. We've been really good away. We play really well on the counter-attack, which suits being away, I suppose. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether home or away, we're going to have to play quite a bit on the counter-attack Saturday. So I think it helps. I think it doesn't necessarily help us, but I think it probably hinders them more being away, if that makes sense.
And what about that those 12 years in management? You sound like you're enjoying it probably more than ever now, but how's it changed being managing players in the modern era?
I mean, it has changed even in the short time that I've been, you know, manager, because, you know, younger players are... I mean, I would never... I mean, I've even got it at step three. You may well have had it at your club as well, and I'm sure there's other managers have the same problem. I never would ever dream of going on a holiday during the season. Like, not a million years to go on a holiday. And I've had so many lads that are unavailable because of this and unavailable because of that. And, you know, we've not got loads of contracted players, so they are all non-contract. So we have to pander to people a little bit more than you would have had to before. There's so many other things that people are interested in other than football, and I feel old by saying this, but I'm a bit of a dying breed, and there's one or two in my squad that are like that as well still. But a lot of them, you know, they give me absolutely everything. They're such an amazing bunch of lads, but I've never known anything like it with regards to people having other commitments. And that's other clubs as well that I hear it about, and just think, God, how is that even feasible that you know, you're not going to prioritise playing football, you're going to go on a holiday, or you're going to go for a golfing trip, or you're going to whatever. You know, it's got to be family first, family and work first, and then football's the biggest next thing. So many people, I think, that are prioritising other things, and that's just the nature of the world, I think, at the moment. And
I hear you, and, you know, and again, not knocking the players, but I fear who's going to be the next manager like you coming through.
Well, I guess so. I think you're right. I mean, you have to treat people a bit differently these days. You've got to. You know, and some of the people at our club are, you know, always say, how do you even put up with that, Davo, sort of thing. And it's like, you've got to be old school and new school all in one swoop. It's going to be tough when people are coming through, like you say, without that old school mentality. You know, it's a bit of a sort of snowflake mentality around the place, unfortunately, around the world, which is not going to necessarily be for the better. I mean, when I was at Cardiff, we used to... If you didn't do the pro's boots, you would literally be beaten up. You know, I'm not condoning that. It's not the right thing at all. But you know, you've certainly learned the respect for your senior pros and how to treat things and make sure you're wearing the right kit and all of that sort of stuff. It's kind of lost a little bit of focus, I think. I mean, I joined non-league, left Cardiff, signed for Bashley as a young 20-year-old, you know, one first year pro type thing. Came out of there and fell into non-league, and I remember it was quite an experienced team, and I didn't say man on to, but I was playing right wing back, and I didn't say man on to a player, Simon Ellie his name was, and literally he pinned me up against the wall. I walked in at half time, pinned me up against the wall, you make sure you tell me man on, you would be on them in safeguarding or something now if you did something like that. It's just not, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen anymore. And I don't necessarily think it's for the better.
I think what I've found this year is on the field's just so quiet. If we sent players out with their phones, maybe it might be different. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're proper sounding old, and your listeners are probably going, "Got to listen to those dinosaurs." But I absolutely sort of with the new world of it, you know, in terms of, you know, different ways to prepare and looking after your bodies and all that sort of stuff is really important. But I still think the world's lacking because of some of the things that people don't do anymore to respect property, to respect your changing room, your group, all that sort of stuff. I still think there's a bit lacking because of that.
Indeed. So, as a manager, then, how are you going to motivate? What's the last message you're going to send your players out with on Saturday?
I'm just going to, absolutely say go out there and enjoy it. That's something I say every single time. Go out there and enjoy it. Quality, your quality will shine through, but the biggest thing you're going to have to do is fight, put your body on the line, run through brick walls for me and for each other, and I'll be proud of you if that's the case. Absolutely no pressure. Go and express yourself and go and show what you can do, because some of those lads could be playing at that level in my eyes. And you know, it's up to them to put themselves in that shop window and go, look, this is me, this is what I do, this is how well I can play against, you know, very, very good football players. So yeah, I'll be telling them to go and express themselves and enjoy it, and I'll be proud of them.
Craig Davis, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Hopefully your players will make you proud, and you'll enjoy your weekend. But thanks for joining us, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
No worries, thanks a lot, Tim.
So I'm meant to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. So welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. It's Editor-at-Large, Mr. Matt Backhoff. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. It's a very frantic week at my own football club, a very frantic week across Non-League. But not too much news of great note. I suppose the exciting thing, we had the FA Trophy and FA Vase draws, some big ties pulled out of the hat there, and then we've got the FA Cup this weekend. But what have we got? Only 30 ties? It's almost... I'm sure everybody that's involved in the FA Cup third qualifying round is very excited, but when you're not, it's a little bit more difficult to get excited about it.
Well, as they say, it's a lucky few now still in the FA Cup, and like we said before, you know, kind of I've got this theory that the fourth qualifying round is kind of a new first round proper a little bit, so it's kind of the one before that where everyone, once you can get through this one, then you know, get a big National League club, it can often be as good a day as a first round proper game from sort of in the past, you know, where you've got so many big ex-Football League clubs in non-league now, and it's kind of tantalisingly close for so many. I think this year it's been strange, isn't it, because lots of sort of the step two clubs and step three clubs have kind of been knocking the lower boys out. There's only AFC Emley from step five at this stage, and obviously they're going to Alfreton, so they're flying the flag for step five, and who knows, strange things have happened, but they'll be hoping to go one more round.
And then I guess, you know, as you say, when we get to that fourth qualifying round and then into the first round, everybody from non-league is then seen as the underdog in most situations, particularly if they're against Football League opposition. So it does seem strange that we seem to only have one survivor from step five. So, but I guess, you know, that's the stage of the competition that we're at.
Yeah, so it shows how hard it is for step five clubs to get to this stage, let alone the fourth qualifying, let alone the first round proper. I think we sort of sometimes probably forget now, even for step four clubs to get all that way. You know, you think of Marine a few years ago, they went sort of unbelievable run, pretty much right from, but it might have been the, I can't remember off the top of my head if it was the very beginning or one round after that, but they went a very long way to get all the way to that third round. And obviously, the finances that come with it are huge for clubs, as we all know. But there's also those moments and trying to make those memories, and you know, the dream is alive for these clubs still, in it. And you know, there are some sort of interesting ties, but it always feels like this one is the one, you know, just want to get through it unscathed and kind of hope for big days down the line.
Yeah, I think, as you said, I think Phil Annette's at FA Cup Factor. I think you say that Emily's progress so far would have, yeah, if they were a Premier League side, they'd be in the semi-final, so it would be a great year, even if you're a Premier League side. And that does show, you know, how far non-league clubs have to go in this FA Cup competition. But, you know, for a club like them, they've had, you know, made great experiences. They've collected the great finances, I'm sure, from the winnings of this competition. And as you say, there's still the opportunity to make further memories this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. They'll go there to Alfreton, you know, as the underdogs playing that card. And we've seen that, you know, if Alfreton aren't on their game and don't sort of take it as they need to and approach everything as I'm sure manager Billy Heath will be demanding, that they'll be, you know, Emily will be trying to cause that upset. And we've seen it down the years. There's always, I say, every round there's going to be somebody somewhere. You know, you've got clubs like Stepwell, Cambridge City going to Hereford, and you know, there's kind of interesting games throughout the whole round, and opportunities for clubs to, someone will be thinking, you know, some of the bigger clubs, you know, got a nice home draw, let's win through this one and see where it leads us.
Yeah, opportunities and upset. That should maybe be our tagline, really, shouldn't it? Talking about non-league every week, because away from you know, the as I said, the FA Cup this weekend, the FA Trophy and the FA Vase draws, the big stories seem to be about, well, upset at football clubs. I think we've discussed these three clubs in recent weeks anyway, but Enfield FC, we've seen their free season tickets be cancelled because of made null and void, simply because of their financial plight. They need to be re-looking and readjusting all their finances. And then we've seen Southend, who are still going great guns on the field, but off the field they appealed their 10-point points deduction to the FA. Points deduction by the National League appealed it to the FA. Next week, I think they've got two court appearances. And then we've got, well, Scunthorpe United. I mean, we're talking Thursday afternoon. I think there's already been two or three twists today. As far as I think Scunthorpe earlier today on Thursday issued a statement that owner and chairman David Hilton was going to be withdrawing funding, and the board altogether were looking to try and get their revenue streams in order so that the club could continue and survive. And they also announced that they'd be vacating Glanford Park because of the legal situation there, but they'd be ground sharing at Gainsborough Trinity. And then within hours, we then saw a statement from Gainsborough Trinity suggesting that they weren't actually aware that statement was going to be put out there. Whether that means that there's not going to be a ground share or not, it's the twists and turns of non-league. It's difficult to keep track of.
Yeah, I think messy probably doesn't quite cover it. And I think it's, as we always say through these, you know, we've got kind of one of those sorts of things we're still working on a little bit for this on this paper. But I kind of feel this Scunthorpe situation has been brewing quite a while. You know, we've had pieces you know, before the season even started. There was, you know, there's been lots going on, and lots gone on since then. Obviously, there's been lots of national media coverage as well. And yeah, I just think a very difficult time for the fans, and that's kind of the, you know, what we keep sort of seeing throughout English football is who are the people who are really affected by these situations are our football fans. And, you know, Scunthorpe fans, you wonder what on earth's going on today, especially as you say with the statement that games are going to be played at Gainsborough, and then Gainsborough kind of saying, you know, this has come out without their consent or knowledge. They said it didn't got ruled out anything actually happening, but not a great sort of endorsement of the situation, was it, to kind of have that come out. And it is, you know, a very, very difficult situation for the supporters to be worried about their club. And we're kind of hoping, you know, it's been bad enough, you know, on the pitch as well, generally in the last few years with the relegations, you know, it's not all that long ago, you know, playing League One, like playoff finals, aren't they? So you know, to see where their club is now and everything that's going on, and you know, the sort of the stress that will be given fans. Yeah, I think we sort of kind of underplay actually how important football clubs are to fans and in their lives and their daily weeks, what it actually means to a lot of people. You know, often people who aren't on Twitter and able to sort of tweet about it and have those sort of networks, as people who, you know, this, that'll be everything to them, you know, watching their club as often as they can. And that's the sort of people we have to sort of think about. And it's very difficult, because I think often, you know, people look to the authorities, and I know that this is something that they've been looking at for a while, isn't it? And as I say, this situation with Scunthorpe does feel like it's been sort of brewing and heading in a sort of difficult direction for quite a long time now, and a very, very complicated situation.
And it's difficult, as you say, you know, people look to the authorities to deal with it. People look to us as journalists, and as journalists, that's what we want to do. We want to uncover the truth and you know, enable the whole picture to be told. But I actually think in many of these situations, even the people involved aren't fully aware of the information.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, yeah, I'm not sort of talking about this
specific example, but
I've had it in years, you know, years gone by, when you sort of ring somebody at a club and yeah, they literally just don't know. They literally don't know what's going on. They don't know what's happening. And things move really, really, really quickly. I mean, I was sort of using rugby as an example today, sort of about Jersey Reds pulling out of the cease training in rugby, and I saw a report saying that the players kind of got a text at 5:30 this morning saying to be at the club at 7:30 in the morning, and they were told that was it. The club was, you know, that's how quickly, you know, that's how they were in the dark. They had no clue. You know, that's kind of one of the hard things about these situations. There's often only a few people in the know, and even those, they often don't fully know what's going on. So it's not good. As you say, with Southend, lots been going on there, and for such a long time. And again, there's this court date coming up, and as far as the judges kind of said last time, this was final, this has got to be sorted. So, you know, as we're speaking now, is a deal being hammered out for a takeover, and that's kind of how knife edge these things are. It could be happening as we speak, and then on you go from there. It doesn't happen, and then there's all the fallout from that. So it's it's a very, they're very difficult from a journalist point of view, very difficult stories to navigate through. You know, it again reminds me of COVID, where things were happening, and get a call right this, you know, get, I think there was one time we kind of got a heads up that a statement was going to be coming out about a certain situation, and then kind of within 5 minutes, oh no, that's changed now, it's all back up in the air. And that was, you know, kind of how it was throughout COVID, continuous fluid situations that were changing literally by the minute.
Yeah, and the difficulty being a journalist as well is the need to check your sources, double check those sources as well. It actually, in the social media era, it's very easy for someone else just to put information out there and not necessarily know that it's truthful. It may well be, but it's very difficult. And the world's a very strange place at the moment. And as you say, mentioning rugby, you know, Jersey Reds not the only club that have gone through similar issues. And I think I mentioned the other week that there's three clubs there that I've mentioned that are struggling in non-league. I'm sure there's 5-6 clubs struggling in Division 2 in a similar, on a knife edge, and hundreds of more across non-league that, you know, are only maybe, you know, one day, 1 week away from the precipice.
Yeah, I think it's kind of one of the all through all business probably is the same situation. Yeah, everybody, you know, it's kind of the nature of all these things. And yeah, everybody as a journalist, you kind of, when you get those stories of a club who are doing really well, and they talk about, oh no, not that long ago we were 24 hours, 48 hours away from closing. Oh, that's a good line, and you sort of, you know, off you go with that. But that's kind of, you kind of probably forget about the actual reality at the time of what it's like and how close, you know, some clubs do come and how close they are sailing to the wind, and how. You know, sort of fragile things. That's when I spoke to Dave McNabb, who's gone in as new Bury FC manager this week, and we were sort of talking about, you know, a few years ago when, you know, everything was happening with Bury and then the Football League, and at that point he's kind of probably not thinking that he's going to be, could be Bury manager sort of a few years down the line of the reborn club. And he was kind of saying, you know, you sort of see these things and, you know, you're doing what you're doing at the time, but it's probably a little bit of a reminder once you said, now once I've got in and I've spoken to people and seen people, it's kind of a reminder of actually how fragile these things are, and you know, what is ultimately a sport that's there to, you know, be entertained by and enjoyed. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't always feel like that in football and sport, but that's kind of the very basis of it, is that's what we're, it's what we get into it and love it for in the first place, isn't it? But, you know, it is a fragile thing.
It is a fragile world. You know, as you mentioned, Dave McNabb were one of the big managerial moves, you know, departing from Bootle, going to Bury this week. I think Mick McGrath's gone in there, who did so well to get promotion with Vauxhall Motors previously. So, again, you know, great pedigree to go in and assist Bootle there. And other than that, the managerial merry-go-round appears to have been fairly slow. There's some lower division changes, but it almost appears as though, yeah, people are focused now. That we hit that, almost certainly in the National League, we hit that 10-game magic mark, and almost people's brains hit a different way of approaching the games.
Well, yeah, put it this way, we had a spread covering all the managerial changes in the paper last week, and we don't this week, so that shows. once you get into a few and you start talking, well, okay, we better put these into a single page altogether, and then when there's so many, it has to go into two pages, you know, it's a bizarre thing. You probably couldn't even cover them all then. I think it's pushing others and others throughout the paper, but, you know, it's kind of always, it's that domino effect that once one goes, another sort of can sort of make their changes as well. But hopefully it does settle down now, and there's still some big appointments to be made. We can see what happened at Oldham. I think since Dave Unsworth left there, they've won through on the bounce, beat Kidderminster in the week, and Steve Thompson's been the interim manager there. So, you know, if he's putting his hand up for the job, he's doing a making fine work of it by winning games like that, definitely helps. So, yeah, there's still a few to come, and kind of again, we talk about fragile. Fragile business and football as a whole, but also being a football manager is definitely a precarious situation, a position to be in sometimes.
Yeah, and I look at the National League, and it's this weekend probably more than ever. I think last week I mentioned about the series of fixtures that Neil Ardley's got for York City to face in the coming weeks, and this weekend it looks like a challenge of the fixtures to show how tight this division is. You've got Chesterfield 5 points clear now, I think, at the top of the National League. But this weekend, I think Chesterfield are away at Maidenhead, who are still, you know, teetering around that relegation zone, although it's very early days. You've got Solihull, who are still unbeaten. They travel to York City this weekend. And then Barnet travel to Kidderminster Harriers, as you sort of mentioned them a bit earlier. Clubs that are at the bottom, hosting clubs that are at the top, you wouldn't like to call any of those games, would you?
No, definitely not. I think it's still, as you say, still so early. It's I've always talked about this, you know, magic 10-game mark, as you say, where you think, well, that's kind of people setting the bar of where they're going to be. But it's definitely at that stage where, especially the way the amount of games there are at the moment, you know, one good week, I think it's a full programme of Tuesday night games again coming up, and, you know, a good Saturday, a good Tuesday, another good Saturday, and everything looks completely different. Same way, if you sort of can have a bad week and get hit by one sort of kind of minor injury, but keeps the player out for a week, and then that missing three games, and that can change a lot. So it's shaping up quite nicely already. I mean, looking at Gator as well, absolutely flying. I think they played Bromley, who've been must have gone 9 unbeaten now, 8 unbeaten Bromley. Just goes to show, you know, what we talk about, all the sort of the big favourites at the start of the season, which Chesterfield obviously are, and are showing, and they've won 6 or 7 in a row themselves, and they're going great guns. But, you know, down below them is definitely definitely lots of clubs putting their hand up at the early stage of the season to be in that mix for sure.
Yeah, and you say, you know, Gateshead are an informed team, but Bromley as well, one that I noticed really keeping goals out, and FC Halifax Town as well. I think they've played, 12 games, scored 10, conceded 10. It's
consistent.
Consistent, but it shows how tight these games are.
Yeah, I think I went to see, came back to Bromley, went to see them at Dagenham last week, and 1-0 win, and I think Andy Woodman was quite pleased. You know, that whole, you know, sometimes you have to dig in, battle, not always be the prettiest in the world, but you get that win and on you go, and that's what they're sort of on the foundation of their unbeaten run at the moment. I think that when you've got so many games stacked up against each other, sometimes you've got to do that ugly, horrible side. And it is, as much as we like to see goals flying in, I think from a manager's point of view, it's nice to have them shut out as well. So, but yeah, Halifax going well, as you say, from, you know, last year they lost some big players after their trophy win, and you always look to sort of see how they're going to get better, to steady start, and you can get a few more goals going in at the other end, then they'll be very happy.
Yeah, and you mentioned those games coming thick and fast, and obviously the midweek games. You have got Chesterfield entertaining Bromley. So by the time, you know, we speak to either yourself or John Couch next week, who knows what the table's going to look like?
Yeah, and that's why this is such an exciting league to cover. And it does, you know, last year was so unique with Wrexham and Notts County, how kind of far ahead of everybody they were. You know, I think we sort of said at the time it was a good job it wasn't three up, three down in a weird way, because last year would have kind of been, you know, one of the most exciting title races would have been actually been kind of quite sort of routine in a way, because they would have both been up by before Easter probably. So yeah, that's why this league is so exciting and so fascinating. And you know, with the extra playoff spots that have been in them for quite a few years now, that kind of has opened it out to everybody. And just the sort of general, you know, approaches by clubs and how professional it's gone. You know, I think back from when I was watching this level of football before I was at the paper, and then since I'm at the paper, it's incredible how it's kind of grown. And come on, you know, I remember watching in the days when there was kind of one or two part-time clubs, and often they'd just come down from the football league. Full-time clubs, and they'd come down from the football league and stayed that way. And everybody else was part-time. Whereas now you've got Willstone and Oxford City, all the Oxford City do a day in the week as well, for like yoga and activation, stretch, and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Willstone, you know, probably the only part-time club in the league with the traditional Tuesday, Thursday night. It's incredible how far the league and the profile that the league has grown in actually in such a short space of time.
And then you look further down the levels as well, and you've got a number of clubs that run that hybrid model even beyond the National League, where, you know, maybe one day during the week, that if everybody's available, they're able to train during the week as well. As you say, non-league, it's a constantly moving beast, and for good reasons, but I guess that probably then brings some of those other problems we discussed earlier.
Yeah, I think there's always been the money has always been a big thing in non-league, isn't it? Yeah, some of the money that you hear about is just sort of swishing around. Makes me wish I'd
get your boots back.
A decent. Well, need a lot. Not just my boots. Need a lot of other things as well to carve out a decent sort of, give myself 50 quid a week, I would have thought, somewhere. But some of the money is crazy, and what people sort of get and what clubs are offered, and I guess it's always been that way. But there is much more, you know, you see it right through the professionalism and the way clubs approach, and kind of that sort of stereotypical, you know, go down to a step five game and see that stereotypical non-league centre half, you know, two knee braces on, and just sort of, you know, the kid's been enjoying himself maybe the night before and all that sort of stuff. It just doesn't, not really a thing that I sort of see anyway. You know, you see these, you know, all through the levels, how fit players are, how they look after themselves throughout the summer, and that's, you know, raised the standard across the whole game.
Yeah, the the legend of Vic Schwartz and the ability to drink a pint of Guinness 2 minutes before taking that kickoff at Yeading FC back in the day. Yeah, I don't think it's likely to be repeated by a modern day footballer. And unless you know better, please let us know if the modern day footballer is more about isotonic drinks than full pints of beer. Anyway, you mentioned that there isn't the double page spread of the managerial casualties, which I think is a good thing. But we do have these 30 FA Cup third qualifying rounds. We have a pretty full programme of league action as well. Any other particular stories of note that we should be looking out for on Sunday's edition of the non-league paper?
So all those FA Cup games being covered and all the league action that's going on. We've caught up with Dave McNabb and Gannon at Bury. We've caught up with James Tompkins at Ascot. Gone from winning the Vars and getting promotion last year and feeling their way into step four, but also enjoying kind of the being the underdog now in the FA Trophy. Obviously got the FA Trophy coming up next week, so caught up with Jamie about that. A piece on Gates had come in, as we're saying earlier, how sort of informed they've been, and what Mike Williamson's been doing there, and he's kind of pushed them on every year, and it's sort of showing again. Couchy's caught up with Spencer Day talking about Alfie Pavey, who's gone from Farnborough to Woking, and Woking pretty keen to get their hands on the National League South top goal scorer at this stage of the season, and they've managed to strike a deal with Farmer. It shows that they how much they wanted him. He went straight into their lineup on Tuesday night against Wolverhampton. Did Alfie Perry even sort of on fire for Farmer since only joining them in the summer? So lots of that. We've caught up with Steve Thompson after Holland's Kidderminster game the other night. Yeah, and lots more to come probably between now and this phone call, and probably put it down and see that something else has happened somewhere, and it'll be all in Sunday's paper anyway.
It's not easy. There was a couple of managerial changes after I'd spoken to John Couch late on Thursday last week that you managed to pick up in the paper, but it is a constantly evolving beast. We do all do our very best to try and make sure that everything's covered, but it's a tough gig.
Keeps us on our toes, Tim. Keeps us on our toes.
Well, some of us struggle to get on our toes nowadays. That's the problem. But
don't want any managers appointed on Friday afternoons. They're the worst ones, because that's where we have to. That's where everything has to change. Normally everything's we're getting towards the end. Getting close to our first deadline there, and then someone goes and appoints somebody. Yeah. Haven't appointed Steve King every week. Bad timing.
And it's not like the olden days where you'd sort of you'd know 3 or 4 days in advance that there was going to be an appointment, and there'd be you knew what was going to happen, and you had time to organise it. Now it's already out there before you know about it.
Yeah, you used to be able to do things like, oh, it's going to happen next week and things like that, and that doesn't seem to exist anymore. Get ahead of it and sort of that, but yeah, things. That's the way of the world, but it's, as you say, it keeps on toes. All good fun.
All good fun, as is the non-league paper every weekend. Matt Badcock, thanks for joining us once again on the non-league football show. We look forward to reading all about it in the non-league paper on Sunday. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
And that's it then for this week. Thank you to all of my guests, as ever. Good luck to all of those involved in the FA Cup this weekend, and also if you're involved in league action as the season begins to really take shape. A big thank you to everybody for listening too. Don't forget you can get involved on social media. Follow us there at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom and on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites, and find our past history there as well, and all most recent podcasts of the last 5 years, I think, or even more that are there. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
Chip Jabber Production. J-I-B-B-A, J-A-B-B-A.